Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
The title of today's message is, What is Your Treasure? What is your treasure? What would you do if you were offered a deal like Jane was just given in the skit? You can have a trouble-free life. You can have great health, all the wealth, cars, possessions you want. You won't lack anything. You can have it all if you just do what you want. Just do whatever you want. Did you realize that that is the first commandment of the Satanic Bible? Thou shalt do as thy will. We've been doing in one of our iConnect groups, Undercover. And we learned that's the first commandment of the Satanic Bible. Just do what you want. And here's the thing. It's setting up man as being independent from God, where I do not surrender, I do not obey, I do not follow Christ, I don't follow anyone. I just do what I want to do. Because the devil does not want us to surrender our lives to Christ. And he makes it sound like what God asks of us, to deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me, is too high of a price to pay. God is a killjoy. He says, lay down your life so that you can find it. And the devil wants to make it look like if we indulge and enjoy, that is the highest value of life. Just satisfy your appetites. Do what you want. Satisfying yourself will produce fulfillment. It'll produce happiness. Yeah, that is the way to a great life. Is that true? Doing what you want, trying to please yourself, trying to give yourself the things that you want to make yourself happy. I want us to look in Matthew chapter 13, because Jesus tells a series of parables. A parable is a story. It's a story in the Bible that has a meaning to it. And let's pick it up in verse 44 of Matthew chapter 13. Jesus is talking about the kingdom of heaven. And he says, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid. And for joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has, and he buys that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who, when he found one pearl of great price, sold all that he had and bought it. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet that was cast into the sea and gathered some of every kind, which when it was full, they drew it to shore, and they sat down and gathered the good into vessels, but threw the bad away. So it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come forth, separate the wicked from among the just, and cast them into the furnace of fire. There will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. This morning, I want to talk about how to make God your treasure. How to make God your treasure. If you're taking notes this morning in your worship program, number one, the first way to make God our treasure is to put God above everything else. Put God above everything else. In these stories that Jesus gave, the stories of the treasure in the field, the parable of the pearl of great price, each man considered the value of the item. The man was in the field, he found this treasure, and he realizes the value of this treasure is immense. It's incredible. And for me to have this treasure, I need to own this land. For me to get this land, I have to go and sell everything I have. All of my vehicles, all of my stuff, all of my house, anything I've acquired, because I need to get rid of everything so that I can gain this treasure. He put this treasure above all of his other possessions, and he got rid of it all so he could gain something that was greater. The same exists for the man, the merchant that was looking for pearls, for beautiful pearls. And he finds this pearl. I can just imagine him. And he's walking into a shop, and he sees this pearl that's maybe the size of a volleyball. I mean, can you imagine that? This big pearl the size of a volleyball. Beautiful. It's perfect. And he realizes, he asks, how much is it? And he's thinking, wow, hang on a second. And, you know, he calls his bank. How much do I have in my bank account? Okay, then he calls up a few of his stocks and bonds. What are they worth right now? And he calls, what's within my IRA? And then he figures up his value and he says, I've got to sell everything so I can have that pearl because I can get that pearl, but I know it's worth so, so much more than everything I have. Both of these men sold everything because they realized this one item was worth more than everything else they had combined. And friends, that one item that Jesus is referring to is our eternal soul, our having God in our life, having God's love, his acceptance, his forgiveness. Jesus is the pearl of great price. Jesus is the treasure that does not rot, that moths will not corrupt, that cannot be stolen from us. And Jesus is saying that if you really want God, you have to sell everything else. You need to put me above everything else. I think what's really interesting is after Jesus tells the pearl, the parable of the pearl and the great treasure, he then tells a story about the dragnet. A dragnet is like you're in a boat, you cast a net out to sea, and you just have the boat move along, and it drags, and it just picks up fish. And there's a lot of fish, and when they bring the fish to shore, they would sort the good from the bad. They're separating the good from the bad. And Jesus tells that parable, and he says, the good, those that are in God are kept, but those that are wicked, they're thrown into fire, and there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's like Jesus is saying there's only really two kinds of people in the world. People that have made God their treasure, and they've said, I will surrender to you, and you're the Lord and leader of my life. And then people that say, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to do as I will. God does not have the authority in my life. Jesus wants to be our greatest treasure. And I want to just ask us this question this morning. Is Christ first place in our lives? Is he first place in every area? Is he first place in my time? Let's get a little practical. Or does he just get the leftovers? Does he just get whatever I can squeeze in? Is he first place in my relationships? Are my relationships edifying? When we're together, do we strengthen each other or are we weakening each other's faith in God? Am I honoring to the other person or do I tear them down? Is Jesus first place in our relationships? Is Jesus the most important thing to me and nothing else? And really the idea of obeying God fits under this. When I'm faced with a circumstance, do I obey God and do what he asked me to do? Or do I do what looks will work the best for me? Because I'll be honest with you, sometimes obeying God is not what's best for you in the natural. It looks detrimental for you to obey God. It really can. And so it's putting God's desires above my desires. It's putting what's his best interest above mine, because ultimately when you put God first, when you seek first the kingdom, he adds everything else to us. I received this email from missionary Jacob Bach. He's one of our missionaries we support to Spain. And Jacob shares three ways that we can fall from God in 2014. This isn't in your notes, but you can write this down. The first way is to flirt with sin. Flirt with sin. And it's like, yeah, I can handle it, so I can just keep dabbling in this. It's just once, or it's just a little bit. It's not going to hurt me much. You know, after all, I have my needs, and I need to meet my needs. And I see a lot of Christians that are doing the same thing. And if I just do a little bit in moderation, I'm fine. So just flirt with sin in your life. The second thing is don't forgive. It wasn't your fault for what happened to you. You were unjustly treated, and so you don't need to forgive. In fact, make them aware of how they hurt you. Hold a grudge. Give them the silent treatment. You don't have to take that treatment from anybody. Hold a grudge. Don't forgive. And then the third way to fall away from God is spend 5 minutes with Jesus. You might find that, what? Spend 5 minutes with Jesus? Yeah, you really can't allot any more time than that. You are a busy person, okay? All you can afford is just 5 minutes with Jesus. I mean, after all, you have work responsibilities. There's your marriage. There's your family. There's ministry at the church, you know, and then you've got to work out. I mean, that's one of your resolutions. I mean, heaven knows you need to be in better shape. And then you need to relax and unwind and watch some TV at the end of the day. You can only afford 5 minutes with God, so just spend 5 minutes with Jesus. Friends, if we flirt with sin, don't forgive, and just minimize our time with Christ, we'll fall away from him because he won't be our first love. We need to reverse that and instead repent of all sin. Any trace of sin, we need to really examine ourselves and say, God, is there anything that's not first place in my life? That's keeping you from being first place in my life. Is there something else at first place? If it is, I need to get rid of it. You need to be first. I need to ask forgiveness from God and forgive other people daily. I need to examine my life. When Jesus taught us how to pray, he said, give us this day our daily bread. In that prayer, he said, forgive us of our sin as we forgive others. I need a daily examination time of sin in my life. And also, I need to look at people that I might be mad and upset at, and I need to forgive and love them. And then the third thing is dedicate myself to as much time with God as possible. Because when this race is over, the only thing that matters is how well you know Jesus. If you knew today that there was one stock, only one stock 50 years from now that was going to be profit earning, all the others were going to cause you to lose everything, one stock that would give everything to you, would you invest in that stock today for your retirement? Yeah, I would. I'd pull everything out and say, that's the one. It's Esurance, baby. No, it's not Esurance. If you knew there was one that was really going to make a difference, you'd invest in it. Friends, Jesus is the one that's really going to make a difference. Dedicate ourselves to as much time with him as we possibly can. Does that mean you don't watch football? Does that mean you don't watch TV? You don't listen to music anymore? I'm going to say this. I can't give you a list because that list is different for every person. See, Jesus wants us to develop a relationship with him where I'm so close to him that when he says, Craig, I want you to give up football. I want you to give up this or that or the other. How long, Lord? Well, till I tell you to do it again. Maybe never. I mean, God wants us to be in a relationship with him that he can speak to us about the practical daily things in our life. That's what he wants. See, God's not about rules and regulations. He's about a relationship. He loves us so much that he died to have a relationship with you and I. Put God first above everything else. I encourage you to join us for our 21 days of prayer and fasting. We have 14 left. Join us every weekday from 12:12 to 1:12 for the whole hour or 10, 15 minutes. It was great. There were some of you, I saw you come, and this was your first time to corporate prayer. Awesome. Way to go. That's great. Some of you stayed the whole time. Some of you could only afford a little bit. That's great. Just give God time. As much time as you can in 2014. Put him first in your life. Let's take a look at the second thing. The second thing that we need to make God first place in our life, and that is to make God our continual source of joy. Make Jesus our continual source of joy. Hebrews 10:34 says, For you had compassion on me in my chains, and look at this, joyfully accepted the plundering of your goods, knowing that you have a better and an enduring possession for yourselves in heaven. This passage talks about Christians being persecuted for their faith. People came and ransacked believers' homes. They took all of their possessions, everything of value, and instead of being mad, they rejoiced. They gladly accepted it. Instead of being sad or full of revenge, wanting to retaliate, they joyfully accepted it. Now, you know, that just seems so unnatural. What would happen? How would you feel if someone came to your house today and they stole the cars out of your garage? They stole, you know, your power tools. You maybe had a chainsaw in there, your lawnmower. They stole your bicycles. They came into your house and they started loading up your furniture and taking it out the door. You know, they go to your gun cabinet. They take your guns. They go to your china closet. They take your china. They take your flat screen TVs that you just got for Christmas, your iPads and your iPod minis and all this other stuff. And you're going, ay, 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 ay. They're taking it all. And you go to your bank account and they've drained that too. The Christians in Hebrews joyfully accepted that. Honestly, when I think of that, I don't think I'm in a position where I could, yay, they took it all. But you see, Jesus was their greatest treasure. They knew they had a better and more enduring possession up in heaven, and they saw the persecution for their faith was like a merit badge that they were authentic Christians. We are genuine believers, and that's why this is happening to us. Thank you, God, that they recognize we are your followers. We're not Christians in the closet. They joyfully accepted it, and that is so contrary to our thought, and also, I don't want to minimize your pain if you're going through a tough time, but what happens in our life when little things go wrong? The transmission on your car goes out. Your hot water heater goes out, and not only that, it floods your basement, ruining your carpet. What happens when you're passed over for that promotion that you really do desire because you have really worked your tail off, and it should have been you, but you were missed. You were looked over. How about when that coworker stabs you in the back, they make you look bad, and you get blamed for their irresponsibility? What about when other people tear you down or leave you out and they exclude you out in the cold? How do we accept those things in life? Do we get mad at God? Is our joy wrapped up in who we are and what we have and what we do and what we're given? Because if our joy is based on our circumstances, then we can lose our joy. But if my joy is based on the fact that there is a God who loved me so much that he sent his son to die for my sin, and he wants me, it's like, can you imagine anything greater than sacrificing your own child to have someone else? I mean, you talk about paying a price. Friends, do you realize that you are Jesus' greatest treasure? He is your joy. It says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. What was the joy? Obeying my Father and bringing people to him. That was his joy. And that's what God wants our joy to be, to loving and following him and bringing others to him. And honestly, I realize when I think about the accepting the plundering of my goods, I realize I have a long ways to go in making God the joy, the ultimate joy of my life. God has so much in store for us that we can't even begin to believe what it is. I heard a story about, it took place in the winter of 320 AD. The emperor Licinius, who was the emperor in the east, broke a covenant with Constantine, the emperor in the west. And in the Edict of Milan, he ordered, he says, I'm going to persecute Christians. And Licinius ordered all of his soldiers to renounce Christ and sacrifice to the Roman pagan gods. Any who didn't, he assembled them together, and there were 40 soldiers in the town of Sevasti, and he told them, I want you to renounce Christ and sacrifice, and they would not do it. And so he stripped them naked, took them out in the cold, and he whipped them. And then he brought them back. They still wouldn't renounce Christ. He imprisoned them. He tortured them. Finally, he said, when they would not renounce Christ, he says, I want you to go out onto this frozen pond, this frozen lake. We're going to strip you naked, and you're going to stand on the ice until you renounce Christ or die. And to make it more tempting, they put hot baths of tubs of water around the shore of the lake for the 40 soldiers to walk off and to get heated up and to warm themselves. When the soldiers were told that, they took their clothes off and they raced out onto the pond and they stood together and they began to sing in praise to God because they were not going to worship Roman idols. They were giving up everything they had in their lives. One man decided, you know what, I've had enough. And he walked off the ice. He got to the bath. He jumped in the water. And it was such a stark contrast that he died immediately. One of the centurions that was watching this whole scene was so moved, because these men, when they started out praying, they said, God, help all 40 of us. Help 40 of us to stay with you and not fall away. One of the centurions, he saw it. He stripped his clothes off. He's naked. He walks out on the lake, and he joins the Christians, and 40 men die for Christ. They willingly gave their life so they could have Jesus. Friends, could that be what America looks like a few years from now, a decade from now? We are living in a country where the government is becoming more and more antagonistic to the gospel and to Christians. We live in a country where the courts are taking what God declares is right, the laws of God, and they're saying they're wrong, and they're instituting laws of man that are sinful. We do not know how much time we have in this country to worship Jesus freely. If the day comes when you and I are called upon to sacrifice our lives or our possessions or our families, will we do it? It's easy to serve Christ in America, relatively speaking. Relatively, I mean, yeah, we might be made fun of. I was hazed in high school for being a Christian, made fun of, but I do not experience the persecution that they do in China, where people are imprisoned or murdered, or in Sudan, where they kill the men, they sell the boys into slavery, and they take the girls and the women, and they send them into harems into Muslim areas. And they become the brides in a harem. We have it so easy. And so many times, oh man, my water heater went out. Thanks a lot, God! And I lose my joy over the carnal, material things of life. And you know, a lot of times it's when persecution that comes, when all of that carnality is stripped away from us and we realize there's really only one thing that matters, and that's Jesus. In Luke chapter 18, verse 18, there was a young ruler who came to Jesus and said, good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus said, why do you call me good? No one's good but one, and that is God. You know, you say, I don't understand that. Jesus was God. Why did he say, I'm not good? Here's the reason. Because the man did not see Jesus as being God. The man, the rich young ruler, saw Jesus as just being human, and this young man saw himself as being good and Jesus being good, and they both can get to heaven. And Jesus is saying, hey, there is no man that is good. Because you see me as a man, I'm not good. As a human, I am not good. There's only one good, and that is God. And Jesus said, you know the commandments. Don't commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother. And he says, all these things I've kept from my youth. I am good. I am a good man. Look at my works. Look at what I've done. And when Jesus heard these things, he said, you still lack one thing. Sell all that you have and distribute to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. Jesus asked this guy to give up everything. It's not radical for us to think that Jesus might call you and I to give up everything, even our lives. As we were in staff meeting and we were talking about today's message, Angela brought up something that she read in a book, that Jesus was the original rich young ruler because he left the riches of heaven, the perfection of heaven, a place where there is no pain, no hurt, no scars, and he came to earth and he gave everything, even going to give his life. And when he asked the rich young ruler to give up his goods, everything he had, he was asking just a small portion of what he had already given up himself. Whatever Jesus asks you and I to give up in life is small compared to the price he paid for you and I, because you and I are his greatest treasure. He loves us. I want us to look at the last thing that we need to do to make Jesus our treasure, and that is to look at life through the lens of eternity. We have to continually look through life through the lens of eternity, because it is easy to look at what's happening to us, to our circumstances, to how we're being treated at school or at work or by our spouse or by a family member or by someone else. And it's easy to look at what's taking place, the circumstances, everything that's going wrong. Romans 8:18 says, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. Whatever you're going through right now, whatever persecution we may go through because of Christ, that suffering does not compare to what awaits for us in heaven, the glory that God is going to reveal in us. Heaven, eternity is what matters. This life, we're just passing through. It's like we're on a trip, we're on a vacation. This is not our home. When you go on a trip, you don't want to live in a hotel room. I mean, how many would like to live in a hotel room over living in a house? No takers. I didn't think so. You know, it's fun going on trips, but after a while, I want to get home. Give me my own bed. You know, I want my bed. I hate being, you know, six of us in a hotel room. I mean, it's really cramped. It's really tight. Can't wait to be back at our house. Friends, this life is a hotel room. It's not that great compared to heaven. Look at life through the lens of eternity. And when we go through suffering times, remember what Psalm 72, verse 12 through 14 says. He will deliver the needy when he cries, the poor also, and him who has no helper. He will spare the poor and needy and will save the souls of the needy. He will redeem their life from oppression and violence, and precious shall be their blood in his sight. Jesus will take care of us. And if we do die, we end up better. And I'm trusting that if I have to give my life for Christ and my wife and kids are left behind, they're still here because they weren't taken. When my life was taken, I'm trusting God's going to take care of them and bring them to the same inheritance I have. I have to trust God with everything. I have to put him above everything else. He has to be my supreme joy, and I have to look at life through the lens of eternity. Yesterday was the funeral of Billy Watts, and in the funeral, for those of you who are here, her son Bob shared a story of a young lady that found out she had a terminal illness and she only had 3 months left to live. And this young lady, she called her pastor to make the final arrangements, her final wishes, and they talked about the songs that were to be sung in her funeral service, about the scriptures to be read, about what she wanted to wear, and they had everything wrapped up. And then she says, oh, I almost forgot something. This is most important. I want to be buried with a fork in my right hand. And the pastor kind of looked at her curiously and just like, is this illness impacting her brain? You know, what's going on? And she says, you're probably wondering why I want to do that. She says, it's because of a story my grandmother told me. My grandma always said, and I've learned this from experience, whenever you go to a dinner or a social engagement, whenever they clear the plates from the main course, someone always leans over to you and says, keep your fork, because it means something better is coming. Maybe velvetly chocolate cake, triple layer chocolate cake. Maybe deep dish apple pie a la mode, hot. You know, keep your fork means, hey, something better is coming, something that is rich and substantial and you don't want to miss. And as people pass by my coffin, I want them to see the fork and wonder what's going on. And then you can tell them, hey, this life, that's not all there is. There's something better coming. There is something that is richer, something that is weightier, something that is more substantial and real. Keep your fork. Even if you're going to lose your life, your family, your riches, your possessions. They joyfully accepted the plundering of their goods, knowing that they had a more enduring and precious possession. Friends, as I was getting ready for this message, I really felt the Lord saying, Craig, you need to prepare my people for the end times. We're told in 2 Thessalonians that one of the signs of the end is there's going to be a great falling away. Jesus said, the love of many is going to wax cold. I wonder, what would happen if soldiers bust in here this morning with guns surrounding us and said, renounce Christ or we're taking everything that you have? How many of you would say, and they said, we're going to take your family, we're going to take your possessions, we're going to take your house, and we're going to strip you of your clothes, all you have is yourself, and they kick us outside. How many of us would say, okay, take it all. Take it all. How many of us would say that? You know, we don't have to go through that today. We don't have to make that decision today. But what if there is a time in the near future that we do, because look at our country, at the direction it's going. Where were we 30 years ago? Would you say that we're more of a Christ-like nation now than we were 30 years ago? Or are we more against God? Where is the direction we're going? Where will we be in another 30 years? When my kids are now my age, I don't know. Unless God gives us a revival, which is what we're meeting and praying for. We don't know. And you know what? Sometimes revival comes because of persecution. The church in China is stronger today than before they were persecuted and became illegal. Are you ready for whatever the devil throws at you? Because here's the thing. If you have a price tag, if you have an area, yeah, God, I'll give you everything but this. I'm holding this back. I guarantee the devil will pay that price tag. He will give you what you want. He knows if you're going to compromise, if you'll sell out. And that's why it's so important that each of us need to settle that question in our heart today and then live in that commitment going on from here that Christ is our greatest treasure. I'd like everyone to bow their heads and close their eyes.
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us, casperfaith@gmail.com, or call us at 307-265-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.